Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everyone and welcome to another fantastic episode of the Draft Doctors. This one is absolute hot fire. Very excited to talk about the tips and tricks to win your league. This is a great show. We do it every year. Helps out anyone who's new to draft, and maybe if you've been struggling at draft, this can help get you over the line and maybe into the finals, maybe get you your first league title. We've actually decided to rename it this year to Swimming and Tips, which I personally thought of and I thought was really funny. But now I've said it, maybe it's not so great. Speaking of someone who's not so great, our very good friend, the Statesman, how are you going?
Yeah, I think I'm being swindled as we speak, to be honest. I did a 12-hour work day yesterday, got home quite late, and did a 12-hour home work day in the kitchen renovation today. Mrs. Statesman, who was out drinking with her friends until 3:30 this morning, did the right thing and brought me a few little gifts just before we finished, finished the job and come to do the podcast, which was a salad for dinner. It was a real treat, a packet of Kettle chili chips and a little bottle of kombucha. And so that's my little treat. So being the cheeky person I am, responded with, well, where's my fucking Pinot?
What's kombucha?
They don't have that in... Oh, speaking again, they don't have it in Ararat.
Okay. Well, it's a live culture drink. It's good for your tummy.
It's a what?
Live culture drink.
So it's like semen.
Yeah, probiotics. Anyway, so I...
Semen.
So I respond very quickly with a cheeky way of, where's my fucking Pinot? And she just points to the wine rack and saying, that's the one I brought you for yesterday after your work so you could have a relaxing drink. So I think I'm being set up because I reckon she's trying to get the guilt rankings to a certain level of my cheekiness that now once I finish the kitchen renos, then I'm moving into the bathroom. So I think my life is doomed. I reckon this is what's going on.
She's playing the long game.
Oh, yeah. Being set up big time.
Well, that sounds like trouble.
It's not good.
And speaking of trouble, our very own friend, the third McLaughlin brother, Cam, how are you going?
In trouble. Actually, perfectly described. I went and saw a couple of mates on the weekend who have recently welcomed a newborn into their life. And the only word I could use to describe them at this point in time is disheveled. They look awful. And it has me pumped for when little McLaughlin comes along.
Well, the good thing is you're looking awful already, mate. So you're set up for it.
Like father, like son is what it will be.
Yeah, you just say congrats on the sex and move on. And speaking of moving on, you can catch the pod on, what is it? iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Podbean, all those places. And check out the website because there's a great article by our new recruit, Doss, formerly of the Fantasy Hour fame. He's moved on board with us. What a great recruit. Didn't cost us anything. But he wrote a couple of great articles over on the draftdoctors.com.au about the fantasy potential of draftees and breakouts, which I thought was really, really good piece. But we're talking tips and tricks today. And just quickly, we've done this show each year we've been around, and we just wanted to bring in some fresh tips this year. So if you wanted to check out some of the old shows, they should still be available on whatever platform you use except for SoundCloud because we have to delete those ones. But if you want to go back and check out some old episodes, there's some different tips, especially on tiering, which we've talked about sort of every year and we've beaten into the ground. So if you're a new listener, I'd certainly recommend going back. We'll drop an article on tiering in January because if you're a new player, it's probably one of the most important things to help you get through your draft and get the best value in your draft. But just we wanted to leave that one out for this year and bring in some fresh tips. The Statesman, why don't you kick us off with one of your great ones?
Yeah, and I will say, I think I've mentioned this in a previous year's podcast as well, but I don't think we've done it to death, and I think it's we should keep this gentle reminder, is be really careful of the salary cap hype. Now, I will say, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and radio's disappeared, to be fair, and podcasts rule my world. So I select the content I want to hear. So I basically listen to every fantasy podcast there is. And of course, being a Tassie boy, I'm very proud of the traders and go on a lot of information. And to be fair, with my salary cap game, I rely on a lot of information that Warnie Cow what's the other fella's name? Roy. Always forget him for some reason. Sorry, I shouldn't be having a dig at Roy. So I listen very closely to the information that they talk about, but I try to make sure I separate that into that salary cap talk. Now, I'll explain this, is that there is a lot of players that they talk about salary cap when we're talking who's turning from a premium to an uber premium. That's hugely important. But when they're talking about the rookies, that's where it can be a little bit concerning. So they get quite excited on someone that's going to average 50 or 60 and potentially a midfielder that's going to average 70 because it's going to make them cash in the salary cap games. Well, the reality, those people who you might getting hyped about or hearing a lot of information about are not going to be worthwhile for you to pick up in your draft. So just remember, be careful of the salary cap hype. Yes, listen to all the information, compute that and make your own decisions, but be really careful of why they are actually people of interest.
Do you think that landscapes, and I agree with you completely about avoiding the draftees for my redraft team, but do you think that landscapes shifting slightly with, you know, see clubs really hitting the mature age talent in the waffle and the knee? Like we see Tim Kelly come out last year and obviously was a valuable draft player. Do you think that landscape's changed slightly, or is it just you're going to have to wear missing out on guys like that?
I'll have to really seriously go through the data of whether this has actually changed. But I can remember when Andrew Shipp went to Fremantle. I can remember when Michael Barlow went to Fremantle as another example. Yeah. So these mature ages have been popping up for a while, but a Kelly just makes the clubs think, wow, there's some real talent out there in the state leagues. We should be searching. So maybe a few more pop up once it becomes trendy. The reality, if they've got a role that you can say is squared away, well, they're probably going to have the fitness base, the strength to be able to manage through the season. If they've got the right role and they've got the right chops, and you just got to think of Apprentice who won a Sandover medal, hopped straight into AFL football, was a good player right from the start. Barlow did the same thing. There's quite a few senior players from state leagues that have done exactly the same, but they are a bit riskier. There are plenty of players that have been sensational at state league but haven't been able to step it up to the next level. George Hall and Smith, for example.
Who?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Yeah, correct. Exactly. Who is that?
Yeah, so maybe it's just one you miss out on and maybe you just go hard on the waiver wire.
Yeah, and it's sort of like the second-year breakout. So generally, I'm quite happy to cop that I miss it on a Clayton Oliver or miss on a Taranto, or I miss on which one of those senior draftees is end up being fantasy worthwhile. And that was Kelly this year. So we're talking probably two players come out of the blue that weren't good enough. I'll concentrate for my draft everyone else that should be relevant. If you miss two, you miss two.
Yeah, it's certainly not going to cost you your league. Cam, what do you got for us?
Mine almost extends on what Statesman's just gone through, and it the key point is to do your own research. So I'm a big believer in listening to podcasts as well. Lots of really good information out there. Listened to the Draft Doctors last year. It was, you know, fantastic and really drove my draft quite well. But what I'm really conscious of is getting tunnel vision for specific opinions. And there are always times where we're going to be wrong. Whether it's us, whether it's your mates, whether it's you know, the rest of your league. But generally, if you are committing to a player, make sure that you're comfortable with committing to that player and that you're not committing on the back of hype. What I mean by that is generally just sift through the stats. There's a long time between now and next season. We're about to get the positions that will be announced in the next couple of weeks. That'll give you know your initial thoughts as to where you should be ranking people. But sift through how many kicks and handballs and tackles and time on ground and all that sort of stuff between now and JLT, so that you're basically getting to that point. You're just sort of affirming or disproving hypotheses that you've come up with between now and then.
One thing I've noticed is, and to tack on to you, is I often try to tell myself a story as to why something happens. And I think it's like, you know, it's just this guy's averaged 78 for his first 2 years. It's his third year. He's going to break out. Well, does it always add up? Like, we look at some clubs like North Melbourne. They've just brought in a whole bunch of senior midfielders, you know. Doesn't someone have to regress? Like, does it mean opportunities for like a Jai Simkin, they're not there to go into the midfield? Like, just telling yourself little stories. Like, I know Dom Sheed's been a popular candidate to break out. Well, they've, you know what I mean? Like, is it going to happen? Well, he scored okay in a couple of games at the end of the year, but that's without Andrew Gaff and Jack Redden started scoring well. Like, not everyone's going to score well. Not everyone's going to be able to do something. I just wonder, you know, telling yourself a story as to why it's going to happen, as opposed to just going, well, natural improvement, he'll jump 15 points.
Okay, I think that's really important. And as well, like, when you're building that, if you do build a narrative, right, make sure that it's not the biggest part of your narrative shouldn't be, I heard that this person's going to break out, and so I'm going to pick them. The biggest part of your narrative should be, I believe that they're trending upwards, and I heard that they're going to break out. The last part of your narrative, we should basically be confirming your opinions, I believe.
But you look at Jade Gresham's a classic one, and he had the more midfield time in the middle of November. I'm like, well, how? Because they've just brought in Dan Hannabury. Like, doesn't he get a go before Jade Gresham? Like, where does this time come from?
Yeah.
This magic, they're going to have a fifth midfielder?
It's the new dynamic. The fifth midfielder, and they're actually going to employ a sixth. Jack Billings. No, that's a lie.
Boom.
Yeah, scary. And I will say, there was some interesting selections in the draft too, and I did notice, and I hope I'm got this correct, but I saw Port take one or two inside midfielders. My first reaction was, why?
That's scary, isn't it?
Why? You can't give enough game time to the ones you've got.
No, well, I think that's what they want to do. They just want to give everyone about 50% time on ground and let them score at a really high points per minute clip and just destroy our souls.
So St Kilda will have a fifth in the midfield and Port Adelaide will have a fifth on the bench.
That makes sense.
Hmm. Fair enough. What's yours, Steve?
I wanted to just shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk about being aware of the league settings going into your draft. And it sounds incredibly simple, doesn't it? It sounds incredibly simple. You know how big your league is. You know whether it's 8 teams, 10, 12, 14. You know your on-field structure, and the two most common being 3-4-1-3 or 5-7-1-5. You know your keeper settings. You know your buy-round settings. You know all your settings. But do you know how those settings affect the way you should value players and positions going into your draft? Because if we're looking at a 10-team 3-4-1-3, for example, as opposed to a 10-team 5-7-1-5, that greatly shifts the dynamic of how midfielders should be valued, because you're starting 30 more in one league as opposed to the other. And conversely, it affects the way a standout ruck or a forward or defender should be valued in a 3-4-1-3. Like, for me, I'm not a early round early ruck drafter, but if I'm in a 3-4-1-3, Brady Grundy becomes a must draft in my eyes. So the way it works is it really affects what you can replace. Like in a 3-4-1-3, those midfielders, they just don't become as valuable.
Yeah.
Like especially the bottom ones. Like that you can replace them with a Jack Viney, he's on the waiver wire. You can, but in a 5-7-1-5, they're gone. So the part that I found interesting and why it came up was as I was doing my rankings, and it was like I always find it tough where to put the guys who are hashtag injury prone but have the high upside, like a Dane Beams, in with the guys who maybe like a Steel Sidebottom who are going to play 22 games most years, but they're never probably not going to average more than 105 going forward. So, but in different league settings, they have different values because I can replace Dane Beams quite easily in one, but in the other one, I can't replace him. So when you're talking about value-based drafting, they're quite different things. So in a shallower league, I'm more likely to take a risk on a Dane Beams as opposed to a Callan Ward maybe, who's got very, very little upside, I'd suggest. So it's just a really interesting thing and probably comes down to team construction as well. Like, I'll talk about hashtag injury prone players a little bit later and just the way you construct teams, but I think it's a really interesting thing. And a simple thing, just a
absolutely
simple thing. And the way drafters read rankings that get put out.
And maybe we need to qualify when we shell out information of this is based on a 12-12.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's I mean, I try to do my rankings so that anyone can use them. I can't be doing five different sets of rankings. It just doesn't I don't have that sort of time.
And I'll move on to my second one, which I'm just about to do. I'm just about to start a run. And the point about using this as a tip is we can become reactionary. So you can be sitting down at pick 13 and you've got another five picks coming to your there and someone picks up Brody Grundy and then someone picks up Max Gorn and then someone picks up Todd Goldstein and then someone picks up Callum Sinclair and then all of a sudden it's your pick and you get the situation, well, if I don't get a ruck now, I'm not going to get a good ruck. The reality is you should be planned, you should have your tiers, and you're better off starting a trend than actually being on the back end of it. Because if you start reacting, then you're going to find yourself reacting nearly every time because someone's going to be smart enough and start the next run. Steve will constantly talk to you about getting your tiering right. So having a tier one forwards and tier two forwards and tier three. And if there's a run going on, but there's still a tier one forwards available, your pick, when the run's on forwards, then you should select it because if you only got tier twos in your ruck, your midfield and your defenders left, then that's how your selection should go. You go your tier one forward. I probably think a little bit differently, although I do tier as well, so I do prioritise who I want in my side. But the reality is I'd rather turn the corner and go, okay, you guys are going hard on the forwards. I'm taking Lockie Whitfield at 13, and I'm starting to run on the high end defenders.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. And I think it's going to be very valuable this year when you look at those high end defenders. They're coming in pretty hot. They're going to be most likely all snapped up before the end of the second round. I mean, halfway through the second round, you'd think. So that's when you start looking at an Isaac Heaney,
Statesman. Absolutely, and the mock draft that we actually did for DOS, would you believe it? I wouldn't mind actually taking that for Grantis if we could. I think I had Zach Merritt at pick 12 and Lockie Whitfield at pick 13. I'm looking at that after Dylan Shields' move and going, that's looking pretty sexy right now.
And I'll tell you what, even looking back on that, and everyone sort of gave him a bit of shtick at the time, but DOS picked Witherden with his second pick, and all of a sudden, that's, you know, it's probably still a little bit too early, but it's definitely got some more merit now, I think.
For his round two, I don't think that's a shocking thing. If Whitfield's gone, He's one of the ones with a big upside.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, could we stop giving Doss a bit of praise? It's three times.
Well, you know, it's really good because if we pump him up and then the listeners get on board Doss, and maybe with Jono not being here so much, we can finally execute the move.
Can we actually...
That we've been talking about.
Can we actually...
Hint, hint.
Hint, hint. Can we actually answer that question? I love the hint. Can we answer the major question here? Was Doss not worth enough that we had to trade something, or we didn't have anything that they wanted?
Well, we offered him, and then they just shut down the fantasy. Right. That's what happened. They went, we'd rather end the brand than have Jono.
Fair cool.
So there you go. Interesting times, Cam.
My second point is to not be disappointed at the end of the draft. You know, I think we've all been there where we're sort of got into a draft with a strategy and a plan, and we did all the right pre-work and you felt quite fresh, and then you've probably had, you know, six pints, made a couple of rash decisions, and all of a sudden you come off the back of it and you look at your team and you think, oh, lordy, what have I done? And, you know, rather than thinking that it's all gone crumbling down and ended like Joshua Jackson's career, hashtag topical from the week, but there's so many other factors that through the year become super relevant and are actually almost more important than draft day itself. I'm not a big tanking advocate, but the first 3 to 4 weeks of waiver wire pickups can shape your season. You can have come off the worst draft, be coming last in the first 3 weeks, and get 3 really big name pickups. You would have got a Tim Kelly this year, could have changed your year completely.
Taranto,
there's a lot of value that'll be on the waivers that no one will have thought about going into the season. So, and not only that, you can trade your way out of it. You get some of those names, you upgrade, you package people together, you move on, and all of a sudden you're actually looking at, you know, maybe a cheeky in the finals and a good run, and you're probably, you know, looking at the, you know, top four. So definitely don't end your draft day on a bad note. Reflect on it, and then in the next couple of weeks when your league actually starts, start to plan out how you're going to make your team better.
Yeah, I think it's really good that you've sort of just repackaged the you don't win your league at the draft.
Correct.
Thing that we do year on and year out. I really like that, just rebranding. But it's a great point. You don't win your league at the draft, and especially when if you manage to avoid, say, a couple of the big injuries and they hit other teams, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even thinking this year, Ed Langdon, who saw that coming? The guy's averaged, you know, 93, and he was, I think he got picked off my league's waiver wire in week 8, maybe? That's bargain. Absolute bargain. You can definitely come back.
And think about, like, you know, and we'll have the question later in the show. There was people who started cold, got dropped, and then had massive second halves a la Josh Dunkley.
Can I say, I saw that question, and all I remember is the Keeper League. I selected Dan Henenbury because I had the last pick 12, Dan Henenbury. How's he gone the last 2 years? My second pick was Sam Doherty, who done his knee. And then my third round, Steve Cornelio. He didn't play round one in 2017. And I went, oh, he's not in the best 22. Dropped him to the waiver wire.
Ouch.
I still won the premiership that year, but Cornelio should be in my team.
That's another point.
Look at the tumbleweed going across our Skype call.
There's another great, great point for do your own research.
I'm looking at Statesman on the Skype call, and there's actually just a hooded...
Oh, sorry, I'm still in my paint clothes and
scythe.
Paint all over me.
It's like the spectre of death is just hanging over you. Oh, wait, that's just your mustache. That's fine. It's going well. That's going well.
Raising money for the right reason.
Yeah, I really hope they cure whatever. What is it? What's it for? Men's health.
Yes.
If they can cure that, they should be working double time to get that thing off your face. I'm going to move along and talk about the term hashtag injury prone, because it's something we get bandied around. It's a bit of a narrative street. And I always think, I've started to realize you're injury prone until you're not. And it will be absolutely thrown around again going into this season. But 2 years ago, Taylor Adams had never played more than 18 games in a season. Since then, he's played 22 and 19 home and away games. Lunch meat, heading into this year, was injury prone, played 22. Gary Ablett Jr. was going to be rested across the back half of the year, played every game after round 7. Jay Ramirez, 20 games. Dane Beams, 21 games. And I think the only game he missed was personal leave. Like, if you follow the injury prone, you will miss out on these little gems. And just on the other side, these are healthy. Like, these are guys who never miss games. Like, Adam Treloar played at least 20 games for 5 straight years, only played 13. Luke Shuey missed 1 game in the previous 3 years, missed 5 this year. Jeremy Howe missed 4 games in 6 years. 5 in 2018. Sam Doherty played 19, 22 and 22. Boom, 0. So it just sort of goes to show that anyone can get injured. And, you know, anyone can string together a good year. I know Mark Murphy's kind of one of those guys who he can play 22 games, average 110, and he mixes it in with a bunch of, you know, 12-game seasons. But, and I'm not saying load your team up with guys like Nat Fyfe, Mark Murphy, and Gary Ablett Jr., and someone who's going to get the narrative street treatment this year in Connor Blakely. Like, just don't load your team up with these guys. But if you balance your team right and you use tiering, like, you might put one of these injury-prone guys in, like Beams, who has the upside, with the guys who don't have the super high upside. And you might have gone the first 2 or 3 rounds with hashtag safe players. You're in a more of a position to take that risk. Or conversely, if you've maybe in your super coach draft, you pick Nat Fyfe early, who tends to miss games, then you might, say, drag a couple of guys who regularly play 22 games and just get that nice balance. But just, I think, you know, the injury-prone thing, if you're getting these guys in the right spot, they can be an absolute game changer for the year.
Absolutely. I'll move straight on to my last one, which is value later. And what I mean by this is we all are a little bit hot on some people. Obviously, George Hall and Smith's name's going to be popped up again, but there's not a lot of people that are going to be going for the cricketer round 5, round 6. He is a late selection, so you've got to pick him late. So you've got to treat him, his value, and we don't know if he's going to get 22 games. We don't know what average. He's only averaged 90s in the VFL, so he's not going to pump out a 105 or a 110 at Gold Coast. The reality is, if he does get 22 games, he's going to average between the 85 and the 90. That's probably about what his level is going to be. So therefore, he's a late round pick. And just because you're hot on him shouldn't overshadow and then take away of taking a quality, solid citizen in the right draft selection that they're available. So if you're hot on someone or you see them as value, just hold on and realise that you can't get everyone. Have them on your list. And this is why Steve talks about tiering. Have your tiers sorted out and then have your little value pockets and almost put away your good side. So you're starting 18 and then that's when you can take your risky picks. So all of a sudden go your George Hall and Smith, go your KK, go your Jack Bowes, go your Anthony Miles. So take the risks a little bit later on, pick that value, and I'll tell you, if you get your value picks right and your risky ones right at the end, then your depth is sensational.
Yeah, I basically do I have a speculative tier. And so I basically put all the people that probably maybe aren't going to get drafted, and if they do, they're going to be super late, and rank them in order of where I, which ones I really believe will break out or have a good season. And then just my last maybe three picks in the draft, I'll probably take one speculative mid, one speculative forward, one speculative defender. And in my league's a four bench league, and I just sit them on my bench. And because realistically I'm going to pick up other FA free agents off the waiver that will replace them if they're rubbish anyway.
And look, there are the obvious sign breakout players. They're always around, and everyone's hot on them. If you get the opportunity to draft, whether it's a Heaney, whether it's a... obviously, Taranto is going to take another step forward now with another position and still keep forward status. So his status is lifted. They're the obvious breakout type of players. The reality... those risky ones, those value ones, take them as value. Don't get too excited. Make sure you pick the ones that are available for you.
Can I just jump in? Because I was actually going to, this was sort of going to be my last thing as well, drafting a breakout in the sweet spot. And I would say, and I was sort of more focusing on the guys like Aaron Hall, Callum Mills, maybe Dan Hand, who are going to be, you know, sort of mid-high round selections. And I would just say, if you're really, really hot on one of these guys, put them in a tier with players who you're okay with getting instead. Like, my example was, like, you are really, you say you're really hot on Callum Mills and you think he's going to average 85 dream team.
Yep.
Average 74 this year. You think he's going to get that 10-point bump for midfield reasons or just growth or whatever. And you might look at there's guys sort of around that average, like Heath Shaw, Michael Hurley, Jack Crisp, Tommy Cutler, Jeremy Howe, Shane Savage and Zach Tui. And you might say, hey, look, I'm okay with getting Crisp, Hurley, and Heath Shaw, but not the others. Put him in that tier and just try to draft the last of it.
Yep.
And it'll probably be Mills. But if you're not okay with getting, say, Shane Savage or Zach Tui instead, put him above him. It's pretty simple. And also use the mock draft simulator, the great tool we came up with.
Of course.
Be out in January. It'll give you a really good idea on things. Very nominal fee to use. Cam, what do you got for us, man? What are you going to wrap it up with?
I'll wrap it up.
Whilst I make up whatever my last point's going to be.
Ripper. So my last point is that leagues endure. Okay, so my league has been going for 5 years. I assume that a lot of our listeners, you know, you might be coming into your first season this year and you'll be coming in fresh, but a lot of leagues have been going for many years. And my point is that people remember being ripped off. So throughout the season, you're going to request trades that, you know, you're trying to catch someone out. Maybe they're a bit napping or they're not really aware that someone's had a couple of good games in a row and you want to try and get some value out of a waiver wire that you've just picked up. So you tell them a story and you try and convince them. You put on your best used car salesman and you sell an absolute pile of sticks for a Lamborghini. And every now and then, it comes off. And you think, that's the best. I've got a Lamborghini, I traded my pile of sticks. But next year, you've only got, you know, if you're a 10-person league, you've only got 9 people to trade with, or 8 people to trade with. You will effectively cut off your routes to a better team if you constantly rip people off. And my... plea for everyone, and the way that I try to act now, because I only have about 3 people left to trade with, is focus on making sure that both ends of the trade see value in the trade. Don't try and sell a pile of sticks. Tell it for how it is, and if there's value in the trade, you can trade with that person again later on. But yeah, speaking from experience, I have 3 people left.
Hashtag rebranding, win-win trading, which goes down to do your own research.
Yeah, good rehashes here.
No. It's a great point, and it actually took it a step level than what higher than what we've talked about before, because we've been more talking about the trade offers. So not people getting ripped off, but people, you know, getting crap offers. Because everyone goes fishing, but yes, you want to improve your team, but I've always believed in the win-win philosophy. Well, it needs to be a win for them. If I'm going to improve my team, they need to be improving their team as well. That's the only way you get a trade done. Yeah, burning your bridges can happen in leagues, and it's never a good thing. And actually, I will say it's not a good league if it's happening, to be honest.
Yeah, so I'll counter that with my league is quite strong, but it's bad behaviour over a series of 5 years that has led me down this path. It's a slow burn that has ended in a whole village burning down.
Yep, and that happens.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy in my home league who I just refuse to entertain trade offers from, so just he kept sending crap offers.
Well, just tell Jono just to settle down.
Jono never sends me an offer. I think we did a trade once, and he traded me Harley Bunnell, and 2 days later I saw him on the front of the paper with an unknown white substance, and bad times, what can I say, but... I want to keep on the trading theme, and this is probably a strange one for me as a bit of a trading fanatic, and it is don't trade for the sake of it. Mm. We hear stories every single year of people, they're frustrated with their league, there's no trades getting done, and people love doing trades. It's fun. It's fun hashing out a trade. Like, I love it. But I think sometimes we just... maybe get a fraction bored, and we're focusing on trades a little bit too much rather than looking at where the real value is in the waiver wire. Like maybe sometimes you're pushing too hard to get a deal done, so you go overs, or, you know, if you're pushing unders, people are getting pissed off with you because you're offering crap trades. I would just say, you know, why are you trading? Like, just ask yourself, why are you trading? Is it to make your team better? Or is it just for the sake of trading? So I've probably dialed back on my trading quite a lot. So I'd just be a bit more mindful of that and look to build my depth, because you sort of see at the end of the year in the AFL, there's so many guys getting rested. There's so many injuries. I often think depth is sometimes taken for granted.
Agree. Yeah, and I really agree with this point. But it doesn't mean that you can't have fun with trades without trading. So my entire point is to make sure trades get done in my league, noting that I probably don't have anyone left to trade with. I like to incite the trades. So I will actively, as soon as the waiver opens or the league is unlocked, group chat, anyone for trades, ? And then just start firing off potential trades to see if people will bite. But maybe that's because I'm, you know, a sad, lonely person who can't trade by himself.
And if you're commissioner, don't veto trades.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Unless they're just an abuse.
Unless it's obvious collusion.
Yeah, correct.
Or whatever. But, you know, come on, people. Let's let people run through their leagues. Is there anything you wanted to add on quickly?
Why doesn't anyone think of the children?
You just said don't look at the draftees.
All right, the questions, because we've got some rippers.
We got some questions from people on Twitter. Aaron Dean asks, when to hold players and when to cut? He drafted Jack Redden and cut him after 4 rounds in his redraft. And I guess it goes back to Josh Dunkley as well, because he started kind of scratchy, got dropped, and then was an absolute fantasy demon in the... second half. So what about these players, guys?
Well, I'd already given my horror story, which was an absolute shocker. Obviously he's talking about potentially a keeper. Is that what he's talking about? Is he just generally talking about...
Well, I don't know if it's a keeper. Redden was pretty ordinary at the start of the year and then obviously had a really hot finish in the second half.
Yeah, but look, what you can't judge is the injuries, the impact, the changes of a club. If he's got to round 4 and he's 0-4, then he needs to take some action, and that's probably fair enough. At the end of the day, back your judgment. If you need to put someone on the bench for a while, do it. Hold on. If you... talking about a Dunkley, I think he showed a fair bit first year. I'd rather hold a Duncan than a Redden, because just Redden didn't look like he was going to grab that chance. He ended up doing so. But when these young kids come through and Gaff is back, I'm a little bit worried about the Sheed Redden story because one of them is missing out. And Marston's another casualty along the way too, probably. So, look, at the end of the day, if you've got your research done, it's not a bad thing if someone burns you because someone will always burn you if they're fringe. And that's exactly what he was.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree 100%. Like, just opportunity cost if you're holding someone else who you think's more valuable. That's how it is. Next question. AJ is starting a keeper league this season. Any hints for a newbie?
Yeah, don't get rid of Coniglio after round one. Look, if you're starting a keeper league and you're in a brand new league, you should treat your first six selections as the best players you can possibly get. I.e., Tom Mitchell, Brody Grundy should be pick one or two, and they don't have to be in that order. After that, look for the best young value. So I'd be looking more for a Zach Merritt, and I'm just using the example because he should be going round one. But look for the Zach Merritts rather than the Dane Beams. So look for the 22, 23, 24-year-old that has got a bit of upside but has that potential elite. And then you go, you fill up your on-ground spots with players that are definite 22 and decent scorers, and then you go hunting for your value as we just talked about before.
Have anything to add, Cam?
No, it was pretty much bang on. We started our keeper this year and I did exactly that.
You don't pick the number one draft pick number one in a keeper league. Tom Mitchell or Brody Grundy is number one in a keeper league.
Yeah, I'll just say, I draft to win. I draft to win straight away.
Absolutely.
Like, I see people drafting for 5 years down the track. Like, winning in the first year is just as good as winning 5 years from now.
Yeah. And this, I'll always say that you pick your best 18 and then you pick thinking of both now and the future. So a Hugh McCluggage is a great pickup this year in my eyes. Tim Taranto is a great pickup now in my eyes. Golf Run is late, but has got huge potential. But so he's not on your 18 and he's not on your bench, but certainly I'd be looking at him coming in at round 19 or so. I'm probably keeping him in a keeper of 12.
Yeah, so Stay's been pretty hot on Brandon Partiff. And our last question from our old mate, We Got Big Cox. Actually, we got an article dropping this week from We Got Big Cox on the draft site, on the Draft Doctor's website. He wrote an article about being a commissioner in a keeper league. It's probably something we overlook a little bit, the very, very important role of being a commissioner. So I'll check that out. We'll probably drop it Tuesday or Wednesday. So definitely, definitely check out the website for that article. It should be a ripper. But he's got a question. And he has a bloke in his keeper league that has absolutely sold the farm to get everyone's first round pick in this upcoming draft. He is thinking super long term with a rebuild. Have you guys ever known this tactic to work? Is it genius or insanity?
So, if I'm reading this correct, if he was in our league, he sold a lot of players to get everyone's round 13 pick effectively because they've all got 12 keepers.
Yeah.
No, this has never worked because anyone of high end is not available. I would assume he probably would have kept a few. So we might have a Tom Mitchell and a Zach Merritt sort of sitting there and then got 10 picks in the first round. No. You go looking through round 13, it's tough. And if you try and pick up your top 10 players from the AFL draft last week, 50% of them you're going to get wrong because 50% of them won't end up being good AFL players and or just won't be good fantasy players and might be very good players.
Wait, are you saying that if someone penned an AFL draft winners and losers article, they might look silly in a few years?
I read a few of these said articles, and when you're deciding that some clubs are A and some are down Right down the bottom, I'm thinking you are kidding yourself. You either can read into the future, or you just making things up as you go.
Yeah, I read a draft from a draft winners and losers article from 2014, and it's fair to say there were some grades they might want to adjust.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the Gold Coast's. That's fine.
And
it was very funny.
And bagging Colton for swapping that pick, it might be the most genius move ever made in history. It might be even Stephen, or it might be a bad move. Now, let's face it, I think it was West Coast and Gold Coast swapped a pick last year, round one for round two.
That's right.
One pick the difference.
Whoops.
Yep. So, bum, bum.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have crystal balls. Like, I mean, I know doing the fantasy, we look at the numbers, we look at the research, and we can tell a story, but at the end of the day, we get a hell of a lot of shit wrong.
Yeah, but I will say that we got Big Cox, who actually lost to me in the plate final this year in the Keeper League, which was quite enjoyable. And I'll still get a draft pick higher than him because I finished lower on the ladder. It's not too often I can get into him, so I might as well do it right there. I would have gone better than Jesse Hogan, mate, but I don't know the rest of your team. But if you've given a round 13 for Jesse Hogan, it's not the worst pick you've ever given up in your life, so well done.
Yeah. I find it hard to believe that person who's traded all, for those first round or round 13 picks as they were, how many of those players are going to be in his keepers for the following year? I put it, not very many. And so he's basically put a 1 year window on himself with low tier players. I don't know. I see it as quite bizarre.
I just couldn't handle losing for 5 years. Like, if you're thinking super long term, that's 5 years you're going to lose.
Yeah. Can I really quickly, and I'm sorry to hold us up here, but I just want to go through the draft this year in our Keeper League. So this is our Listener League Keeper. And I'll go through the round 13 draft picks. Sean Grigg, Jeremy Cameron, Blake Akers. Oh, I like Blake Akers. Trek Conchett, Scott Selwood, Andrew Brayshaw. Long-term pick. Nick Newman, who ended up playing, seven games? David Zaharakis, Matt Scharenberg, Ed Curnow, very good first half of the season. Brendan Goddard and Sean Higgins.
Yeah, but if you're playing long-term, you're not drafting those guys, are you?
Well, and that's my point. I can't see too many below them that I would say, geez, they're world beaters now. And then a lot of them have got question marks. So there's a lot of high round draft picks selected after that that aren't proven yet whether they're going to be good scorers or not. So I just can't see how that strategy looks any good. And maybe he works for one of those media organisation that did the draft report, the winners and losers, and knows all the details.
Well, we've just lost one listener, so good work there, Stacey.
Sorry.
Don't softball that answer in there. Your team's fucked, mate. There we go.
But to be fair, and this is how good you could be, if I went through every team here, I'm sure I could find one or two absolute jets that were selected after round 13.
Yeah, no doubt.
So if you pick up all the right ones, who knows? But I think it's unlikely.
That's probably going to wrap it up, I guess. What are we talking about next week? I've got Burn Men next week and then Sleepers and then DPPs. I think we gave ourselves a couple of weeks just in case they didn't come out the same time as last year. So next week, Burn Men. Get around that. Look forward to that show. And your mustache will be off your face by then.
It certainly will. It's gone. First opportunity it can.
Thank Christ. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
What an easy show to run without Jono.
Oh, super smooth.
Very smooth.
All right. Thanks for Thanks for listening, everyone, and be sure to check out the website for the great articles dropping on there each and every week at the moment. There's a couple on there. They're probably better written than any of the stuff we've done. So thanks for that, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.